Welcome to Elevate Your Event, your favorite podcast for transforming fundraising events. Join us weekly for expert tips and creative ideas to make your next event a standout success.
In this week's episode of Elevate Your Event, we will join Lori Mackay, who is a panelist on a discussion around Fuel for the Future, fundraising strategies for higher ed institutions. Enjoy.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our panel. My name is Colleen Carroll, and I serve as the NX Unite lead here at Nexus Marketing and will be your moderator for today's session. Our topic today is Fuel for the Future, fundraising strategies for higher ed institutions. And I'm really looking forward to hearing from this group of panelists. To begin with our introductions, I'd first like to introduce Justin Ware, who is the Chief Consulting Officer and co-founder at First Name, a video-driven personalized donor engagement software and service. Their top services include digital development officer programs, authentic student video ambassador programs, and the Mercury technology platform to scale personalization. Justin, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Also joining us today is Catherine Earhart, partner and co-founder at Fairlight Advisors. Shakespeare was her passion at University of California, Los Angeles before Catherine set out to become a literature professor. Her mentors encouraged her to join the workforce to gain experience. That is when she landed at Charles Schwab, where she found a new passion for educating people about investments, the stock market, and financial planning. Catherine followed that career trajectory for 25 plus years, working for Empower Advisors, Barclays Global Investors, iShares, and BlackRock. Her passion now continues through founding Fairlight, where she helps nonprofits, foundations, and endowments invest to achieve their mission. Catherine, thanks for being here.
Good morning or good afternoon. Thank you.
Also joining us is Lori Mackay, Director of Marketing at Hanbid. For the last 6 years, Lori has worked as a fundraising software event expert, assisting multiple nonprofits, including educational institutions, in effectively utilizing fundraising software to maximize their results. Whether it's implementing new software solutions or providing valuable insights on best practices, Lori is passionate about helping nonprofit organizations achieve their mission through innovative technology. Lori, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me today.
Finally, joining us is Brooke Battle, founder and CEO at Swell Fundraising, an online fundraising and event management software for nonprofits. Brooke loves fundraising events and believes that they can play a powerful role in a nonprofit's branding and fund development strategy. She founded Swell in 2012 to help raise more money for good causes. Brooke, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, it is time for us to jump in and get started. And Justin, I'm going to have you start us off with our very first question. How has the landscape of higher ed fundraising evolved in recent years? And what emerging trends are you most excited about?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think, you know, from our perspective, at least, and the work that we're doing and what we're seeing, it has a lot to do with the role that omnichannel engagement plays in donor engagement, in warming, in cultivation, solicitation, stewardship. And that's really for all levels. I think sometimes when we hear omnichannel engagement, we think just annual fund, just a new donor engagement center or something along those lines. And certainly has a very powerful role in that place. We've seen some really incredible things, and we actually take time to use all the channels to warm audiences in between solicitations. All the way up to leadership annual giving, even major gift giving. You know, I'm really excited about some of the things that I'm seeing, some of the roles that are opening up in the major gift space that recognize even the very best gift officers really can't be in front of a donor in a meaningful way every week, nor would the donor or prospect want a gift officer in front of them in a meaningful way every single week. However, you can do a lot of things with video, with personalized video, with storytelling, with authentic video. The role that authentic video plays is really a game changer. You know, we've seen as many as 54x. That's 54 times the number of people who will watch an authentic student video to completion versus something that might come from a leadership position that, you know, to quote a client, some of those stodgy university videos. So, you know, I think really, you know, kind of pulling the mask off, humanizing your engagement through authentic content, video taking the lead, but really focusing on a coordinated omni-channel strategy at all levels. Again, annual, leadership annual, major giving is something that, you know, we've really seen take shape, and we've been really proud to be at least a small part in that development over the past couple of years.
Justin, thank you so much for starting us off. Catherine, I'm going to bring this over to you. In terms of endowment management practices in higher ed, what emerging trends have you seen and what are you most enthusiastic about? Yeah, what's been really interesting from our perspective, since we manage the investment side, is really the donor activism and student activism around what the endowment is invested in, and also transparency of the endowment itself. So we've noticed that, you know, some universities and higher education institutions have been pressured to divest from fossil fuels and other sort of, industries that may be harming the planet. And the challenge with that is that in some cases, UPMIFA, which is the sort of regulations that surround management of institutional funds, have said that in some cases, divesting is a violation of UPMIFA. So that's been kind of an interesting trend that we've seen. And I think donors are starting to ask questions. They're also asking questions about who is managing the investments. And in some cases, some of the well-known universities have declined to state who is managing their investments. I think donors are caring about, you know, is it managed by, are there opportunities for emerging advisors or diversified companies to manage the investments, or is it going to be the same large institutions? So those are some trends that we've been watching here at Fairlight Advisors.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Catherine. All right, Lori, over to you next. How have you seen the landscape of higher ed fundraising evolve, and what are you excited about?
Well, I think we can all agree with the pandemic and then the dip a little bit with financial strain on individuals and donors. Over the last couple of years, I was reading an article on LinkedIn that was kind of exciting for us, and it's something that we've seen in our space in fundraising software, is just that re-engagement of donors across the board, especially on the secondary ed market. And I think I was reading in one of the articles that it's anywhere between 10 and 12% increase in donating to secondary education and institutions, depending on what you're reading. And so that's exciting for us. And what we love, and of course, what we're excited about at Hanbidge, is that digital platform opportunity that educational institutions can be utilizing to reach out to their alumni base and really increase their stretch and their flexibility and their year-round fundraising efforts. Of course, for us here as software people, we're really pumped about digital fundraising.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Lori. All right, Brooke, I'm sure you can guess what question's coming your way. Thoughts on the landscape of higher ed fundraising and the trends you're excited about?
Sure. And just to distinguish from all the great things that have already been said, which is what I love about these panels. So the recent trends in education, Lori noted the increase in giving. I think that higher ed institutions have been, thanks to the pandemic, a little faster to adopt some technology. Whereas pre-COVID, it was really tough to get past they all have a core system, you know, and we're very wed to those core systems. So that has loosened up a little bit. Higher ed's always a slow one to change. So that has loosened up a bit, and I think is very exciting for the sector. Another thing that I'm not sure if it's exciting or not, but I think it's exciting, is the removal of the alumni giving percentage metric by U.S. News and World Report. I think that kind of a mixed bag, I think, for development offices, but that's a recent change that's pretty dramatic for annual giving and development offices. So that's one I think that will change how things go. And then finally, the major trend, which goes to that growth, is how much of that growth is from foundations, high net worth individuals, and the vast majority of that funding is restricted. And so that's a big trend. And I think as things become more politically divisive, that's something that also is going to need to be watched. Maybe something to be taken advantage of, but also just like anything in higher ed, it goes both ways. So those are the trends, major ones that we're watching, particularly alumni giving shift going on for development offices. I think that I'm excited for development offices because I think it frees up development offices to truly be fundraising, which is different than targeting alums. And so affinity for your institution comes in a lot of different forms, which is what Justin mentioned. And so I think that's kind of an exciting thing to be free of.
So that's me. Thank you so much, Brooke. Lori, I'm going to have you start us off with our next question. What strategies have been successful in engaging alumni across different generations and demographics?
Thank you. So this one's an exciting one for us because we had a podcast episode about 2 weeks ago, and we were really zoning in on fundraising through the generations. And we had some really cool statistics about the different generations and, you know, because everybody is looking at the boomer generation and then the millennials, right? And then the Xers are kind of being skipped a little bit, you know, I'm an Xer, so I don't really appreciate it. But the different demographics. And one of the things that we found completely fascinating is the demographic and understanding the demographic of the donor. I mean, first and foremost, you know, you need to understand what generation they're coming from and what fuels their philanthropy. And so with the millennial donor, we just had the podcast about it, but they're like the most giving generation right now. They're giving to the most organizations. I'm trying to find the statistic that I just had on this, but it was really fascinating. It said that there's 72.2 million millennials and 84% of them are donating to three or more organizations. So they're wanting to spread their philanthropy out a little bit more. Gen X is the lowest as far as how many there are, but they're usually supporting around four organizations. And then the boomers, of course, are donating to almost five organizations. So they're splitting it up. But 84% of millennials are donating, which is a really high percentage, 59% of Gen X and 72% of boomers. So they're on their way and really not dismissing based on the generation you're looking at, but also just opening up your fundraising efforts across the board for all the different generations. And how can you be reaching them?
Thank you, Lori. All right, Brooke, over to you. What strategies have been successful in engaging donors across generations and demographics?
Sure. One of the hard parts about higher ed fundraising, of course, is that a person's affinity for your institution can come in so many different ways. And so the strategies we've seen, obviously, we've seen athletics be an incredible unifier of giving across the board. We've seen athletics fundraising completely transform institutions, actually. And it runs across, you know, that transcends generation and demographic a lot of times. Peer-to-peer fundraising has been very effective in markets that that a college is trying to open up. And the third thing that we are directly a part of, to the extent that someone is running alumni engagement events at all, we've helped them connect them through technology. And so accessing different groups through hybrid technology, live streaming event, to the extent someone's doing alumni events or fundraising events, it has helped them to be able to connect both outside their geography and across just across different wealth categories, particularly if the entry cost is high into those. So we've seen that change a lot in the last couple of years. We only had one college doing hybrid events pre-COVID. We've been doing hybrid since 2012. We're the crazy people that have been doing that a long time. So we only had one higher ed institution doing hybrid events pre-COVID. And now almost all of their fundraising events are hybrid and reaching different demographics. And they have all universally been surprised by how many people from outside their markets and from a distance to tune in. So those are the ones we're seeing working. It's campaigns that speak to the affinity of that group, transcends their demographics and their generational affinity.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Brooke. All right, Justin, over to you. Strategies for successfully engaging those various generations.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go back to Brooke's point about the U.S. News and World Report participation changes. And I think it is a mixed bag because, you know, on one hand, we're seeing, candidly, a lot of divestment in annual giving. And that's unfortunate because I think investment is necessary there, but I do think the way that you approach it needs to be so much different than what we've done in the past. You know, Brooke talking about the affinity-based outreach and really understanding alumni and non-alumni donors and what they're interested in and communicating with them along those lines is so critical. And we can be better at that. You know, we can be better about, you know, looking at alumni outreach, especially at the broad-based level and saying, you know, moving away from, As an annual giving director, I have 8 campaigns a year, and I've got to make sure I get those campaigns out, and they have to go out to this many people. We really have to break that down. Think about who we're communicating with. What matters to them? What have they raised their hands and told us through, event-based outreach, through digital outreach and engagement? There's so many things that we can learn by paying attention and then showing them that we're paying attention and listening. And I think that that's one of the big changes is we've sort of gone from that mass, somewhat generic outreach of you must love this institution because we have your email or your direct mail address, and move towards here's what you've been telling us through your activity, through your behavior, and here's how we're going to engage with you based along those terms. Much more segment-based, much more personalized, even for the annual fund donor. And again, I think that's probably the good piece of, the changes of the U.S. News and World Report. It's not just at all costs, just get everyone you possibly can to make a $10 gift. Think a little bit more about your strategy and your engagement, what you're doing, how you're finding the right people to move up the pipeline from that annual fund. That's the good piece. I just hope that the industry continues investing in broad-based engagement. We don't have to call it annual fund if we don't want to. But that communication, that marketing, that, that omni-channel outreach for all of those different levels and donor designations, and again, alumni, non-alumni, that's where I hope we can see continued investment in the future.
Thank you, Justin. Catherine, I'm going to bring a kind of different question over to you. What strategies have proven effective in growing and sustaining endowments for educational institutions, particularly when it comes to engaging alumni donors?
Thank you. Yeah, I think when colleges and universities prioritize spending to better direct the donors to programs that are critical to the longevity of the organization, of the institution. So, we look at it strategically when the endowment priorities are set, your universities are more likely to see impact, which will encourage donors to give more. And I love this quote by actually in my industry, James Tobin is a sort of famous guy, is a Nobel Prize winning economist from Yale. And he invented this term intergenerational equity, which really should be the guiding light for all endowments. Basically, what he said was this, that the stewards and trustees of the endowment shall protect the interest of future beneficiaries against the claims and actions of the present. And so we interpret that as, maybe rather than looking at it myopically as any gift is good, that might really be more self-serving to the donor, like changing the name of a building or getting a facility that's not really needed. Being able to protect the organization, the school against the sort of that kind of behavior and really focusing on what's needed, which could be, more financial aid, increased programs that would prepare the students for the future, might be the priority of the university rather than a new gym or a new sports complex. So I think that's something interesting that we're seeing. I think what's also fascinating is you are seeing donors wanting to still restrict, donations very narrowly at times. I think it's Yale that has something like 8,000 managed accounts, which means those are different types of restricted funds, which can become, quite unwieldy. And it almost is like the tail wagging the dog, which I think is an interesting trend. So, really having the priorities set at the top level. So the plan giving officers and the major gift officers can really help focus donors and steer them where the needs are greatest.
Thank you so much, Catherine. All right, Brooke, I'm going to have you start us off with our next question. How do you recommend personalizing engagement and stewardship efforts to create meaningful connections with donors?
Well, this is a very short answer. And I probably should just bump it to Justin, I think, really. But it's a segment. It's just data. Everybody knows the answer to this one. I feel like it starts with a great data segment. And this is where technology does need to scale. What you're doing and how you're doing it, so that your team isn't siloed, that you're not carrying information that isn't shared across your team. And that's where technology really ensures that you have the information you need to personalize that engagement. And I hate to repeat, but I think video and what's happened in video to personalize engagement is really tremendous. And I love it. So I'm going to stop there because I think others on the panel may have a lot more to say about that, but that's my short version. Just have the data and segment
Perfect. Thank you, Brooke, for starting us off there. Justin, I'll bring it over to you. Thoughts on personalizing engagement and stewardship efforts to create those meaningful connections?
I mean, Brooke, you said it. It starts with data. You know, I mean, personalization is only as good as your data is going to be. Any technology, you know, is only going to be as good as the data you put into the technology. So that is really important in this age of personalization where our audiences, alumni, donors, prospects expect personalization. You know, again, to get there, you have to start with really good data, because otherwise you can go in the opposite direction and attempt to personalize, make a mistake. And that's probably worse than not personalizing at that stage. I think there was a question from Chad in there about AI, which I'm sure we can get to at some point, but AI can help with that. There are various tools and platforms that, you know, again, given good data, can help you better create personalized outreach, helping you write emails, things like that, that matter to the donor, to the prospect. Sometimes though, it's not technology. Sometimes it's a program and it's a process that you build. You know, for online giving days, for example, we have this thing called a large gift protocol where we want to make sure we get a deeply personalized message from a student out to everyone who makes a gift over a threshold, $250, $500, $1,000, you know, whatever that threshold might be set at. The goal is to deliver about, you know, 300, 400, 500 personalized videos over the course of the day. It goes more, does a little bit more than just say the name of the person, but might also talk about the fund and the impact of that fund and what, you know, what's taking place in that particular area. And again, that's just a matter of having really good students who are trained and have maybe a technology platform like a thank you, for example, where you can, you know, sit down in front of a camera and record something based on a loose script. But again, you know, until we get to using deep fake technology, which I haven't seen yet in this space, you still need people to be able to have that level of personalization. So it is definitely something that can be enhanced with technology, but also processes and how you're training and, you know, the programs you're building and who you're hiring and the tools that they have.
Thank you, Justin. All right, Lori, over to you. Thoughts on personalizing engagement to create meaningful connections?
Well, at the risk of being uber repetitive, Brooke, I would agree. It's about the technology. It starts with the donor data, moving into the technology, where I could probably kind of expand a little bit more on what Justin was saying was that concept of impact reporting, you know, keeping your donors informed throughout the year and throughout their engagement about how their contributions make a tangible difference to the university or the organization, and really talking about and over communicating to them as well about the impact and the personalized impact that those have over time. So it's really just coming back and keeping that constant amount of communication, again, segmenting. And then the other concept that, you know, I've seen work because this is where I've been living for all these years is the donor-centric events. So there's always your fundraising events that we talk about, but also having community building events that aren't necessarily fundraising based, but are just building your community as well. So that adds that little bit of personalization among the common theme of the university, and they love their alma mater if they're an alumni, or they love the research that maybe a different department is doing. But just keeping the bonding amongst the donors themselves, I think it's kind of a really cool way as well to increase personalization.
Thank you so much, Lori. All right, Catherine, over to you in your world of endowments. Could you share some insights on the importance of personalized stewardship for endowment donors in particular and how it can contribute to long-term relationships?
I think the other folks on the panel are better suited to answer this question, but I will say, as a recipient of outreach from my university and from my kids' universities, I'm really noticing the lack of personalization. It's sort of like, dear parent, and you're like, well, okay, you know, do you even know me? Like, I'm the parent of a sophomore, not a freshman. You know, it's that kind of personalization. It just feels like you're already, as a parent, you know, spending money on the university, and they're immediately coming after you for contributions without any sort of personalization. So I've noticed that both as a parent and as an alum, we still have a long way to go. But I know the other folks probably have better advice for everyone. Thanks.
Thank you, Catherine. We're actually going to stick with you for this next question. And again, your world of endowment management, where do you see the opportunities for technology to really enhance our work?
I think from a technology perspective, again, I think other folks are better suited to answer that in terms of fundraising. But I think what we've seen from the investing side of it and the, you know, kind of matching investing with donor stewardship is there are some systems that are really able to kind of make the connection between what the donor cares about and, you know, how the endowment is being managed. And I think we're going to need a lot more granular detail about what's important to donors as we continue to steward and manage the endowment. And I think, you know, that's hopefully where AI can come in. You know, they can, there's a lot of programs that can do an assessment of somebody's capacity to give. But I think understanding where how they're investing today and what their values are, that's something that I think we can get better about communicating to them about how we're stewarding the endowment. But I again, I think the programs and the technology are not quite there yet.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Brooke, I'll have you answer this question next. How can we identify where technology can best support our higher end fundraising?
Sure. This is actually sort of jumping off the last and almost interrupted, but thought, nope, I can answer that in the next question. Because to the point about data, Catherine, you mentioned getting the hey parent email, you know, because I feel like every development officer at a college that I speak with is, you've inherited a big system and every campus has a big system that's legacy and it is almost hard to write the ship at this point for a lot of people. And so I don't know that a lot of you aren't empowered to change your tech stack in that way, the big tech stack. So you've got to find a way to become an expert in what you have and to correct that foundational piece that you've got. There are a number, like, I mean, Handbid would be this way, Swell would be this way, everybody else too. I do think people use technology like ours that feeds into their system. So if you're Salesforce based and all, well, we can feed new data into your systems to help you get that updated in an automatic way. So that would be a strategic way to help you automate some updates into your core system by using some smaller platforms that can feed new data and update data for you. So I would say foundationally, that's it. And I didn't even write that as a note coming into this. My second thing is if tech really belongs everywhere, is the thing. A question like that is, how do I identify where technology goes? I mean, frankly, there isn't anyone's job that isn't touched by technology. So I thought I'd bring up just some basics in higher ed, for example, that I'm shocked that some people, like I'm shocked when I go to reach out to somebody on LinkedIn and you're in development and you're not on LinkedIn. I'm just like, my mind is completely blown. So I'm just going to go for basic, like LinkedIn, getting your young alums as they graduate to get on LinkedIn so you capture them there in these simple ways. I do think hybrid events and getting people on campus, if you can, in some way is amazing through technology. And then the other thing that I would say is that we've run into and I've watched people do is to be careful of where you send your donors. Like Catherine mentioned, all that amazing work in prospect research, using AI, you know, a lot of AI is on an open server. I'm getting into the weeds now, but a non-tech immersed person selecting technology, you could really inadvertently send your donor to a place where they don't want to be. There's some will planning platforms like that, you're not being a great steward of them using some free platform that will do certain things. So I would always say be careful of free. Be careful of where you're sending your donor and do your homework with regard to their privacy policies, because the boomerang on that for you could be really devastating, particularly talking about the kinds of donors that Catherine's talking about. So that would be my two cents on technology, but it belongs everywhere. I can name 25 platforms you should look at. So depending on your job and your higher ed institution.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Brooke. All right, Lori, over to you. Thoughts on where technology can best support our higher ed fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, to speak to Brooke's, what she was saying as well as Catherine, you know, A, you understand your donors, you understand who they are, what they're giving to, right? That protects you and protects them from stuff that they don't want to get. B, feelings and emotions that are brought up that you don't care about me or whatever. We're trying to avoid that as much as possible in the fundraising community. What I loved about what Brooke said is look at the technology you're currently using, and then look at those partnerships and integrations that technology is utilizing. I know us at Handbit, as well as I'm sure Brooke and other people that work in technology, we have trusted partners that we are vetted that help to increase your donor database, like we talked about, updating information, stuff like that, but tracking donor activity over time, and then utilizing those trusted partnerships and asking, most of the tech companies that you're working with have trusted partners and relationships that they know. So use your educational mind as a secondary institution and go out there and educate yourself, because there is so much out there right now. There are organizations that we have partnered with ourselves that literally go out for secondary institutions and find and collect and update donor data. Like, we don't do that at Handbit, but we trust people and we know those people and we have built relationships over time. So maybe find those holes in what you're utilizing. And the other thing is, you're a secondary institution. You are amongst the youngest, most brightest minds. Ask them, ask your interns, ask your assistants, ask all the different people in your department, what are we missing here? What would you think would be a cool filler for technology that you'd like to see implemented? We're big on the live stream hybrid events as well. We think let's increase your donor. They don't have to be necessarily on campus or on site to donate to your organization, but how can you make that even better experience for them? So ask and educate yourself and find those holes and fill them.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lori. All right, Justin, final thoughts on where tech can support our higher end fundraising.
Yeah, just like Catherine said, with thousands of restricted funds, controlling or dictating a development strategy, don't let the tail wag the dog, right? Figure out your strategy, determine your strategy, understand what you want to do and how you want to do it. Because like Brooke said, they're technology for everything, right? And there's different ways of doing giving days, there's different ways of doing omni-channel outreach. We value video in a big way and text and email and social media and all those pieces. So we often work with VanillaSoft for some of our engagement centers. If you have if you're looking to have a really strong peer-to-peer component, you might want a crowdfunding or a giving day platform that really, elevates the online ambassador experience, which a lot of them do now, but sometimes in different ways, right? Do you want to do maybe team-based fundraising online? There are better tools for that as opposed to maybe something that's more driven by matches and challenges. There's whatever you want to do, you can probably find technology to do it. So really make sure you're being intentional with your strategy at the top, how you want to engage people, what your priorities look like in the year ahead, what your staff look like, what the skill sets of your staff looks like. All of those things that you would use to outline a strategy, do that first and then go shop for the technology. But, it happens all too easily where we're really excited about a piece of technology because it does do some cool things, but those things are not what you necessarily want to do in the year ahead.
Thank you, Justin. All right, Brooke, I'm going to have you start us off with our next question. What advice do you have for higher ed fundraisers looking to build strong, sustainable fundraising programs that will support their institutions well into the future?
Don't let the U.S. News and World Report change what you're doing, which Justin said. I have that same worry. I think that it offers an opportunity for institutions to change their approach to annual giving, looking at community affinity for a college. Affinity for a college isn't just because you went there. I have a high affinity for my children's colleges. It's amazing. when somebody's good to your children, you love them. So there are a lot of connections to a college, and I do think that frees us up. And I think there will be a tendency for institutions to cut back there, and depending on who the decision makers are. So I would say continue to build that foundation. And the other thing is there's a real focus right now on high net worth. There's just such, and be careful of that trap. I think that over the long term, that will leave you in a place where you've run out of new names. So those are the main things. Keep building that strong individual giving foundation.
Thank you, Brooke. All right, Catherine, over to you. What advice would you offer to higher ed institutions looking to establish and nurture robust endowment programs?
Absolutely. Yeah. One thing that we encourage all of our clients to do and just the industry sector in general is to have a very diverse finance and investment committee stewarding the endowment. Many of them are donors as well, and you can fall into the trap of, you know, a strategy that isn't necessarily working to steward the endowment, and everybody's afraid to say something. And so you keep kind of following this strategy that isn't quite working. And I think having diverse opinions, diverse people, diverse thoughts will allow you to think about your strategy more holistically and be able to impose term limits, as I suggested, because that kind of forces the committee and the trustees to adopt, you know, and inherit sort of different ways of thinking. Because I think if we continue with one strategy and we run out of options, you know, then you have yourself in a difficult situation. There was a university kind of near my location that had an issue. They had a long-serving trustee who was very passionate about the investment strategy, and it wasn't serving them. It wasn't transparent. It wasn't liquid. They weren't a big enough endowment to really warrant this type of strategy. And yet, you know, his name was on the donor wall. So everybody had a difficult time sort of standing up to him. And I think it was a real challenge for the university. And I would encourage, you know, folks to not get caught in that trap. There are, you know, very generous donors who may have only been giving, you know, their $50 a year to the annual fund, but they're actually going to leave their entire property to the university upon their death. And, you know, that's something that is hard to suss out unless the plan giving officer is really doing that continual outreach. So as Brooke said, you know, don't just focus on the high net worth. There may be those who are giving just a small amount, but will, you know, provide their legacy to the university.
Thank you, Catherine. All right, Justin, over to you. If we want to build those strong, sustainable fundraising programs, what do we need to do?
I mean, yeah, I'm echoing a lot of what's already been said here about, you know, just kind of continued engagement, but it really is true. And I would encourage you to find ways to stay in front of your donors in maybe non-intrusive ways, right? You know, for more than a decade, I think we've been using the phrase in workshops and strategies and whatnot saying, make sure you leave a window or maybe a door open to your institution for passersby, right? Give them the opportunity to see what's happening, to see the impact of donor activity, to see the impact of the institution when they're ready, when they're in the neighborhood, when they're ready to talk. For us, that has meant, you know, leading to a company and a strategy where we produce hundreds, if not thousands, of unique videos every year so that every week on Facebook, there is something new. Every week on Instagram or the stories, there's something new for the passerby to see. Oh, that's cool. It's warming, right? It's omnichannel warming. And that's just really important. And I'm really heartened to hear everyone talk about the value and engagement and, you know, broad-based giving and growing that pipeline, because it's true. I'd really hate to be the VP 10 years from now taking over an institution that has just completely foregone the base right now, because it's going to spell trouble for a lot of institutions if they're not doing that work.
Thank you, Justin. All right, Lori, final thoughts on how our universities and colleges can build those strong and sustainable fundraising programs.
Yeah, I'm just loving this conversation because it just speaks to my heart. You know, it's not about just focusing on those major donors or those major givers, but it's also giving that wide breadth of opportunity for anybody who comes across any portion of your university to be able to find something that speaks to their heart and then to also be participating in the future of something like a university. It's what I love about the university system that's a little bit different than a lot of other fundraising organizations that we work with is legacy. You have a legacy in most universities that most organizations would love to have over a period of time. And so you really have history that you can be tapping into. So besides what all these other panelists have said that are excellent advice, I think beyond that, you know, just really communicating well with people that are, you know, current donors, prospective donors, people like me who go to sporting events and stuff. I might not have anything else to do with CU other than CU football right now. but I love CU. And if I can see other opportunities and things that CU is doing, I am looking at that as a donor opportunity as well. So, you know, affinity to a university, as Brooke has been saying, I think comes from all different levels and all different ways, and just make it easy for people. You know, we talk about technology and stuff. It shouldn't be hard to figure out how to donate to your university. It should be easy. Do you have it easily put on your website? Are you, you know, are your searches in Google, are they efficient for people to be able to give and to get involved and then have that follow up with the communication and stuff as well? And then, of course, I'm always going to harp on community and relationships. And I think that's how you keep people, you know, involved over time. Are you engaged throughout the year? Are you providing those cool, I love, you know, kind of what Justin was saying, those testimonial videos that put a face in front of you that you can watch something that's changed a student's life or an alumni's life, or just the story, you know, the storytelling in fundraising. And I think that's unique in a university where you have so much story and so much history to pull from. It's like a marketing director's dream, right? You have content after content after content. So use it and then open up your breadth of knowledge for people.
Thank you, Lori. All right. We had a question submitted by Chad about how we see AI driving changes in personalized outreach. And I'm going to even broaden it to just how you see AI impacting our higher ed institutions and fundraising. And Justin, can I have you start us off with this question?
Yeah, I mean, we use it all the time. It's creates so much efficiency. You know, we do so much script writing, for example, and writer's block is a real thing. And we're not writing entire scripts, video scripts we're talking about here with AI, but we're getting started. We're writing a script. We're running it through AI to get new ideas for how to be more succinct with things. We're taking meeting notes from a previous meeting and creating the next agenda for the next meeting using that. And, you know, there's obviously the concern of it replacing some jobs, and that's real. I mean, automation long before the computer age has been replacing, you know, jobs in the world. However, I think if you really lean into it and start using AI to be more efficient and to really kind of enhance and bring your creativity to the next level, build on what you're doing, I think it'll be a really powerful tool to make you even more valuable in your role. So, we use it all the time, from, you know, the basic chat GPT to, you know, I think Jasper might be another one we use for script writing, but we get back to how to use technology to personalize. That's how, right? It allows you to really create scripts and emails and agendas and, you know, a lot of different things that you might get stuck on for half an hour, 45 minutes. So you can just, you know, run it through one of those platforms, and you've got a really good starting point, or you've enhanced it or improved it in some way.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Justin. All right. I know people have a lot of opinions on AI. Do any of our other panelists want to jump in here? Brooke?
The only thing I would add to what Justin said that we are really tuned into is privacy related to AI. So like running scripts through there and all that, awesome. Helping you do your job faster, great. Our programmers love it. It has sped up their work in an amazing way. So I just, you know, I would just say, if you aren't on it, try it. That's my fear for somebody, is that they think they aren't tech savvy and they're not trying it, and you're getting behind every day that you don't buy it. That's the short version.
Great point, Brooke. Anyone else want to jump in with AI before we move to that number six question? Awesome. In that case, Brooke, why don't I have you start off with it? What do you see as the future of higher ed fundraising, and how can schools get ahead today?
You know, the thing about higher ed, I spent a lot of my extracurricular time in higher ed. And so there's a real have not situation going on in the higher ed community, with regard both to admissions. It's also, though, this is also happening in fundraising. And so that's a real issue in the higher ed community, I think, that if you're not in the have category right now and you feel like you're in more of the have not category, then I think that's going to put additional pressure on you, going forward. So that's one thing I see. And the way to get ahead of that is to have a really strong connection to your decision makers and make a 10-year game. I mean, you need a 10-year game plan for how to become a have. What does that look like for your organization? So I think that's one thing to get ahead of and see that trend happening. The second thing is that giving And what's happening in higher ed is becoming more and more politically divisive. And again, that's also going to hit giving in an interesting way. What I love about the kind of giving, we're all talking about that kind of broad-based giving, is you don't tend to hit that with athletic giving and these other things. So there's a strategy that you can use to continue to build your base of fundraising and do things without hitting those targets. But that tendency for a donor to want to be restricted as they go into that planned gift, it's going to become, I think, even more and more difficult for colleges. And that'd be a good conversation to have today before that planned gift comes in, before you're having to do it. So these are always easier conversations to have today than tomorrow. And then finally, recognizing that I don't think we're going to buck the trend in restricted giving. And so begin to think about how to segment giving in your college and to realize that people just giving to a college is an abstract idea. Giving to a kid, giving to a program, giving to a dorm. And I know we hate that as fundraisers. We really love a nice big unrestricted gift, but I would say you lean into that in a way that is really healthy for the financial. There's a real conflict between your financial team and really begin to have that conversation if you aren't already.
Thank you so much, Brooke. Justin, same question over to you. What do you see as the future of higher ed fundraising and how can we get ahead today?
Yeah, well, I mean, what I hope is the future, like really big picture here, but you know, I'm so passionate about higher education in general. We have those things, the political divisiveness, we have the, you know, the struggles with students seeing the value in it, prospective students in the admissions and enrollment space and all of those things. But I really hope that we help do a really good job and help elevate all of higher education to help people see the importance and the impact it has and how it's a driver of so much growth and progress. And I think if we really communicate that well, and if we bring more people into the fold and we open up the conversation, we make it more diverse, we engage more communities in philanthropy for higher education, and at the same time, helping people see the value and yes, the educational experience, but the research and all the work that takes place at all the amazing land grants across the country. I hope that fundraising is part of a movement here that really reestablishes the importance and the greatness of higher education and increases the accessibility to everyone. Again, that's not terribly tactical, I know, but it really is something that I hope that we can contribute to.
Thank you, Justin. All right, Lori, thoughts on the future and how we can get ahead?
Well, as we were talking about AI and so much technology and everything, you know, there's one thing, at least for now, that AI is always going to be kind of missing, and it's going to be that personal component. So maybe potentially looking as we go into the future of, you know, fundraising, whether it's universities or any kind of fundraising moving forward, is going less from a dollar-centric approach to more of a human-centric approach. So increased storytelling, increase all the, you know, like I talked about earlier, you've got your history already that is so rich in most universities. So just kind of focusing on a little bit of that human-centric, you know, and a little less on the dollar in and of itself. So I think that would be my biggest suggestion moving into this next season, especially as you're addressing, as we talked earlier, different generations and different demographics, understanding their motivations towards giving. So I just think that'd be something to be useful for universities moving forward.
Thank you, Lori. All right, Catherine, thoughts on the future when it comes to our endowments and how we can get ahead?
Two things really, I think, are important. One is the, you know, I'll continue on the path of transparency and transparency for the trustees stewarding the endowment, transparency inside the organization as well as transparency with donors. So I think for inside the organization, if the stewards of the endowment have a window into what's happening on the development side, what's happening with fundraising, and vice versa, so that the two really are connected when they're talking to donors, especially as the other panelists mentioned, this increasingly political climate around giving to universities or taking away from universities, as it were, really having that transparency of what's going on between the two organizations, I think, is critical. The other one, I think, is really just focusing on as the other panelists said, storytelling. But I think there's a component to the storytelling around how the investments are being managed and whether or not it makes sense to spend more of the endowment. I know that that, you know, can be sort of like, well, what is she saying? But, you know, the growth of university endowments has been 325 to 450% over the last 30 years. And we, you know, we know the names of some of the very large mega endowments. You know, they're upwards of $41 billion, and they could essentially fund the entire first year for many freshmen. So the question is, you know, if an endowment is earning on average 9%, but they're spending only 5%, the question remains, you know, are we spending enough? And, you know, will donors look at that and say, well, you know, you guys have so much money. Why am I giving to this sort of general pot of money? Why don't I further restrict it? Which, again, creates other problems. So I think, you know, as the stewards of the endowment, as the development committee, you know, should we be showing our donors, you know, that we are spending more, that we are taking the profits from the endowment and putting them back towards the university in a very meaningful way?
Thank you so much, Catherine. All right. With that, we have reached the end of our panel. I want to give a huge thank you to our panelists. I know if we were in person, there'd be a round of applause. So in lieu of that, just know that I'm sending that energy through the screen today. But with that, I think we'll wrap it up here. Again, huge thank you to our panelists, and I hope you all have a nice rest of your day. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this panel discussion regarding Fuel for the Future, fundraising strategies for higher ed institutions. If you enjoyed our show, please take a moment to leave us a review. You can find us on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Don't forget to subscribe for more great content. And if you're a fan of video, check us out on YouTube. Until next time, happy fundraising.